I think with Thomas Müller, the brain is maybe the most important part of the football player.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern podcast. Having regained their spot atop the Bundesliga table after breezing through their Champions League group stage matches without dropping any points, Bayern Munich find themselves in great form with just two games left before the World Cup begins. But what has been the catalyst for Bayern's uptick in form, and who really deserves some of the credit for the recent impressive displays? Well, I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about those questions and a few more things with my friends Tim Richards.
Hello there.
And Sebastian Zimmermann.
Hi.
Like I said, Bayern are back on top of the Bundesliga table after a win against Hertha Berlin yesterday, but maybe more importantly, a disappointing result for Union Berlin earlier today. But they also had a perfect qualifying round in Europe, the only team to have three perfect Champions League group stages in their history. They haven't dropped points in eight different matches. I mean, everything is just kind of going perfectly for Bayern at the moment. And so I guess the question I want to really just begin with to kind of dive right in is, you know, what has caused this turnaround in form for Bayern? They started the season really great, and then there was a period of draws and losses where things looked like they were falling apart. And then ever since the 2-2 draw to Borussia Dortmund, that really should have been a win, Bayern have just been fantastic. And so, Sebastian, I'll come to you first. Is there anything specific that stands out to you that has contributed to or led to Bayern's recent success?
I think it's probably all too tempting to go and find too easy of a kind of answer here, because I think it has actually been several things. And I also want to point out that I don't think we should think of this season as having a very bad start and then suddenly everything worked. Because I guess that's what I have been seeing too much already on social media and sometimes the media proper, basically. Because I really don't think that's what we have been seeing so far. I would argue that it has gotten somewhat better now. And I think most people would point to Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting playing a very important role in that. And yes, I think he does. But it's way too easy to say, oh, now we have a number nine and this guy is much stronger than everybody thought he was. And that's the only reason why things are working better now than they have been. Because what people, I feel, tend to ignore is that our offense really hasn't got that much better than it was, because the offense was, for the most part, working. And yeah, okay, we did some tweaks there, and arguably in some close games we kind of profit from having a guy in the middle there who's just a born striker who just knows where the goal is and how to score one. But I think there are other things we should not overlook. For one, there is the defense. I think the backline has been looking much better than it has before at times. I think Upamecano is just much better than he was last season, and much better than he was early in the season sometimes. And of course, the same is true for De Ligt. De Ligt is also much better than in his first couple of games. And also, I think Pavard has been serviceable as a center back, I feel, although not perfect. I mean, I was not the biggest fan of his performance against Hertha. But yeah, this was not our best game of the season, honestly. I think you would be kind of hard-pressed to find someone who has actually watched, for example, this game and the Gladbach game, and who would say that this last game was better than the Gladbach game, really, right? So I think we need to make sure that we have a bit of a perspective on this and not just, yeah, run away with just the actual wins we got. I think that's a thing that's not going to tell you much of what's actually been going on. And of course, another thing I want to mention here is Sadio Mane, because he's been looking much better for these last couple of weeks. And I think he's probably the guy who profited the most from having Choupo-Moting in the middle. Not necessarily because it's Choupo-Moting. Maybe, I don't know, but not necessarily, but from having a number nine in the middle and being able to do what we had identified rather early on works better for him, which is being on the left side and then switching positions with the number nine at times and going into the middle a bit, but not really going to the other side and not really doing the most kind of intricate kind of runs that we have seen from other people. This is what has been working best for him, which is, of course, understandable because he's the newest guy in this offense, basically. So, yeah, you would expect that things don't run as smoothly for him in terms of coordination with the other guys as for some of the others. That, I think that's not a real surprise. And I think it probably also helps, which is, again, something I want to mention about Choupo-Moting, in a positive way, because I think I've taken away a bit from what other people say about him in a positive way. I think we should also recognize that he's someone who really fights for that win much more than Lewandowski would have at times, I guess, because he really wants to win until the last minute, and he's someone who has kind of a presence there and who's also, well, a factor in terms of having the right mentality on the pitch, really, which probably surprises some people, but I don't think it really surprises us because we know that he has been a relatively important factor in the dressing room even before he got this much playing time.
Yeah, I think you're spot on in kind of name dropping Sadio Mane as well as Choupo-Moting. I mean, Choupo-Moting is as in form as any player in Europe is at the moment. I think he's literally scoring every single goal that he's been playing in since he started, since he got back in the starting 11 for Bayern Munich. And then it does seem like Sadio Mane is, you know, not only benefiting from kind of the change in system, but also just finding his form, finding his feet a little bit as well. But Tim, I'm wondering if you have, is there anything that has stood out to you as, you know, contributing to Bayern's recent success? And what about the defense? I mean, in the past seven games, Bayern have kept four clean sheets, and most of those, I think all of those actually have been without Manuel Neuer, at least most of them have. So clearly something has started to click defensively. So maybe, you know, you could speak to what's going on there.
I think there's one thing that you can say Nagelsmann's like really turned this around, and like he's found a system that works, and obviously including Choupo-Moting, as Sebastian mentioned, and there are like individual things that are like, you know, almost like incremental changes to say, okay, if that happens, then this player moves here, or there's like on-pitch decisions. I think as a whole, players who have needed to step up have stepped up. Because obviously there was a big discussion at the start of the season about what is Goretzka's future at Bayern now that somebody like Gravenberch has come in, who's, you know, quite a well-rounded guy. He's very young. Goretzka's showing to be quite injury prone. Like, what's that gonna, like, how's that gonna impact? And obviously Sabitzer's performances were really useful at the start of the season. I think Goretzka's shown to be very reliable this season when he's been called upon. The partnership of Goretzka and Kimmich has been really great. But then also guys like Serge Gnabry, who I think like we've all mentioned him as someone that like really, really needs a good run of games. He's not been stellar. Like, he's not been performing at like a 10 out of 10. Like, he's playing in London with a number 22 on his back. Like, he's not exactly doing that, but he's doing enough to show, okay, there's a curve that he's on. When you have guys like Sadio Mane starting to find form, Serge Gnabry finding form again, but also being able to show that players like Benjamin Pavard, who we'll obviously discuss later, to show that kind of willingness to say, okay, if I'm not going to be playing here, I'm going to be doing the best that I can here. I think it was the game against, I think it was against Pilsen, where at the end, the back line, you had like Stanisic as a left centre back. I think he started at right back, and then he moved to left back, and then he moved across, and then Paul Vanner, he was at left back, and it was quite makeshift. But I love that because it shows that everybody's prepared to do whatever it is that they can in order to get a good result at the end of the game. Because I think, obviously, it's ridiculous that we're, well, I say we, I'm still talking about this guy even though he's not here, but if you look at what would have happened in this sort of a situation last season or the season before or kind of any time between last season and 2014, there would have been players in this squad that would have said the team isn't doing well enough to serve me. When you have something that's so focused on one person, it's kind of up to everybody else to kind of pick up their level for this one person. And it's not been that case. It seems that everybody's kind of doing it for the betterment of the entire team. The squad has looked to be just generally very, very happy. Okay, there have obviously been like a couple of moments with like draws that should have been victories and the defeat against Augsburg that shouldn't have happened. But it's really reassuring to see that everybody there is clearly just having a great time and they're all having fun. Okay, we'll talk about Pavard a little bit later. But on the pitch, everyone seems to gel really, really well. And everybody seems to have taken that step up to say, I am going to do that bit extra because, you know, you've got it in the tank. I think it's kind of the difference between, well, one of the differences between how Bayern ended their tenure with Niko Kovac versus how they began with Hansi Flick. It just, there wasn't an entirely drastic change in the way that the team was set up, but there just seemed to be this almost intangible quality that people were now prepared to run that little bit further to kind of make the pass that might have fallen a little bit short. And as you mentioned, like with the defense as well, I think Sven Ulreich has been as great a backup as you can ask for. I think he's that one season where Neuer missed, well, virtually the entire season. I think it was very common for some fans to kind of criticize his performances against Real Madrid. Fundamentally, that wasn't the reason why Bayern got knocked out, and everything that that guy did up to that point that season was unbelievable. I think it's clear that he isn't as good a goalkeeper as Manuel Neuer is. I think Sven Ulreich would probably be the first one to say that. But having somebody like that who is happy to deputise and then step in when he absolutely needs to, I think there's a good parallel that can be drawn between Sven Ulreich and Choupo-Moting. This is somebody that's never been the star, well, certainly not at Bayern. He's never been the star, but when it was necessary, he was called on and he delivered and has continued to deliver. And having somebody like that in the squad is just absolutely invaluable. And I can fully anticipate both of those guys getting some form of extension. And honestly, I'd be completely fine with it as well. I think the team is just doing really, really well. The players all seem to be gelling really, really well together. And it's exciting. Like this was, I said to a few people, like friends of mine will sometimes ask me, like, does it not get a bit boring? And it never really gets boring supporting Bayern, but this season's probably the season that I've been the most excited about since, I guess, maybe when Guardiola took over, because it was like, okay, what's going to happen here? This is really exciting. Seeing what Bayern can do without like their big guy up top, or seeing what somebody like Sadio Mane can do or Matthijs de Ligt with this new coach, like, I'm really interested. And he's not disappointed. It's been entertaining. The players all seem really eager, and I love it. And I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think it's as exciting of a time to be a Bayern fan as there has been one in recent years. And there's just so many good things happening. I mean, we haven't even brought him up yet, but obviously, like, Jamal Musiala has been maybe the standout player for Bayern so far this season. I would give a shout out, by the way, to Dayo Upamecano, who I think has been playing phenomenally, no matter who he's paired with. But him and Musiala has just kind of become like the main man, the fulcrum in Bayern's attack. He's playing such an important role, and Tim to, you know, talk about, to borrow a phrase you just used, you know, it's fun to watch Bayern playing without that main man and Robert Lewandowski up top, but Lewandowski is not the only kind of main man Bayern have been missing. Bayern's recent uptick in form, and I'm not insinuating that there's anyhow a connection, correlation doesn't equal causation, but this uptick in form has all been without Thomas Muller. In fact, you know, he hasn't played since September, and during that time, Jamal Musiala has just kind of, like I said, become the most important figure in that Bayern attack. And so, Sebastian, I guess just for the sake of discussion, it's something that needs to be brought up. Are we witnessing at least the beginning of the end for Thomas Muller and his time at Bayern, or at least the beginning of the end for him being one of the most important players, a must-start type of player?
It is hard to say. It is hard to say, really. Of course, it kind of could be, with new young players definitely becoming kind of leading figures here, specifically Musiala, as you have pointed out. I think Musiala is kind of the biggest argument why Thomas Müller could lose some of that standing. On the other hand, it's really hard to say. We have not seen much of Thomas Müller in the system that we are playing right now yet, so it's really hard to say how he would fit into this and how good he's able to play in this. This is probably largely then largely down to where he's going to play, who he's going to play with, how flexible the system is going to be, and so on and so on. So far it has been a bit lopsided, really, because Mane has been playing on the left, and on the right there has just on the right and in the middle, basically, there has just been people mixing it up much more than Mane on the left side. So I could see Thomas Müller there, but it really all depends on the system, and it kind of also depends on where you go with Jamal Musiala. I mean, it's not even easy to nail this system down right now. I'm not quite sure we have really settled on anything yet. It's not quite clear if you would rather read this as a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1 or whatever. So there are just a number of question marks here. But yeah, I think Thomas Müller is for now definitely still a starter. And I think that's what has been the case from the beginning of the season. Because, yeah, even with the system we were playing at the start of the season, it was not quite clear for anyone on offense what the pecking order would be and where they would be playing and what that would actually mean. So I think that has been kind of up in the air since the beginning of the season. But Thomas Müller has so far proven that he's going to be able to do very well under any kind of circumstances. And I really don't think he has lost a step here or anything. I think he's as good as he has ever been. And when he's coming back, which is probably very, very soon, that he's going to properly be able to start, I have no reason to believe that he's not going to be one of the names that we are going to be seeing starting a whole lot. Because I think there are a number of other guys who have still not as much going for him as he has. And as I said, he just always finds a way. And I just cannot see how he would be any worse than he has been, because we talked about that a lot. I mean, he's not the youngest anymore. He's definitely among the older people that we have in that squad. But he's also one of the guys who should be able to shrug that off the most easily, because that's just how he is. He doesn't need, like, muscle mass, he doesn't need particular quickness or agility or whatever, and he's not at the age where his brain is slowing down or anything, because I think with Thomas Müller the brain is maybe the most important part of the football player. And yeah, really no indication that he's slowing down in that respect. So no, I don't think so. I think we're going to have a lot more fun with this guy. I don't think he's leaving the starting formation anytime soon.
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, Thomas Muller fan in me loves to hear that, but then also the major Jamal Musiala fan in here me starts to ask questions like, okay, well then what happens whenever Muller does come back? What does that mean for Musiala and his role? And so, Tim, I guess, and this is pretty much just going to be speculation because I doubt we see a whole lot of Muller in the next two games, maybe, you know, a substitute role or maybe, you know, one start. But let's look ahead maybe to January. When Muller does come back in, you know, who is that kind of at the expense of? Because Choupo-Moting has been pretty amazing, and I think that he wouldn't have got this, you know, the minutes he's been getting if it wasn't for Muller being injured. And, of course, Mane is stepping up. Sané is coming back from injury after, you know, he's had an incredible season. I think he's been right behind Musiala for me in terms of the effectiveness in attacks. So I guess, Tim, you know, how does Nagelsmann make all this work, especially after we just kind of found a system with Choupo-Moting up top that really does seem to work well?
Yeah, it's not the easiest. So this was like a big question mark that was in the episode that I did a few weeks ago about like what happens when you have to base everything around one particular player. And it kind of like follows on from what I was saying about like about the other guy no longer being at the club anymore. It's not easy, but it's kind of at the point where if everyone else is playing at a really, really high level, he can really only get in by being better. And so if that means that he has to wait for, you know, Sané to have a bad game, or Choupo-Moting to have a bad game, or Musiala, or Gnabry, or Coman, or Mane, whoever, it's something that I think he should have to work for. I don't think anyone in the squad should be guaranteed a starting spot. I think the players that are guaranteed a starting spot should be the ones that have been regularly performing at such a high standard. So obviously guys like Kimmich, like Sané when he comes back, like Choupo-Moting, I guess like the defence is kind of up for debate a little bit because Upamecano, De Ligt and Hernandez have all been doing really, really well. So choosing two from those isn't the easiest decision to make. It's not easy. I think if we were to look at what's happened historically, you can maybe anticipate form for players like Gnabry and Coman, and also I'll try to avoid being biased, and Sané as well. I think these guys, the level that players like Sané and Musiala are at currently, it means that if they are to drop off, the drop to whatever the bad level will be isn't going to be too much of a detriment. It's when you're kind of middling out at, like, you know, the best that you can deliver is like a 7 out of 10, and then you start to experience this bad run of form, and then it's like, okay, you being on the pitch is actually a problem. Like, we've seen that before, and obviously like last season and also the season before that as well really highlighted that Serge Gnabry is great in short bursts, but has often struggled to deliver over a full season. Statistics wise, it looks like he's great, but I think I worked out he's really only delivering like goal involvements in less than 40% of all the games that he's played. So there's every chance that when Muller comes back, potentially Gnabry's form is dropping. So that kind of opens the avenue for potentially Sané to play on the right wing, because I think he's not, I prefer Sané on the left, but I think this season when he's been playing on the right, he's not looked as bad at all. But also the whole thing's fairly fluid, so that's kind of academic in a way. I do think that there will definitely be opportunities, if not for Nagelsmann kind of, you know, having to shift everything around, but simply because some players are just known to not deliver at certain times, which is a huge shame. Obviously, it's a huge shame because you want everybody to be getting like a 10 out of 10 every single game. But I think the way that, if hypothetically everything continues the way that it currently is, and Choupo-Moting stays at a rate of scoring or assisting or just being that vital cog to end plays. If he keeps up that standard, he shouldn't be dropped by any means. I think if Sané can kind of get straight back into the level that he was at before his injury, I don't think he should be dropped. He should be missing any games before. The same with Musiala. I think there's three players, and it's Mane, Coman, and Gnabry. I think those would probably be the three players that are likely to experience like the competition. But then at the same time, are you likely to drop Sadio Mane? Probably not. But I think, like, considering how fluid the Bayern attack has been this season, and also just how fluid a player Thomas Müller is, and as well as like all of the other players are, I don't think it's going to be too much of a stretch to see him get regular minutes. I think he'll definitely be playing, but it's whether or not he'll be starting every single game. I think that's going to be a very difficult question to answer, and I think we'll only be getting an answer to that when it actually happens. It's not something that I feel would be easy to predict.
You know, we can almost kind of take this conversation and not only have it about Bayern, but also the German national team. And Thomas Müller, aside from 2018, has been a player who's always stepped up at the World Cup and played really well. And given the way Germany performed at that World Cup, we won't hold him against him. But Sebastian, you think maybe we kind of will see another great World Cup performance from Thomas Müller to let him know, or to let, you know, kind of the world know, Bayern know that, hey, yeah, he does still have it? Or do you think that Hansi Flick kind of is finding himself in a position like Nagelsmann where he has to consider maybe not even playing Müller for some of the games?
I think a lot of that depends on who's going to basically be the striker. And I think that's very much up in the air right now with Timo Werner gone. So I think there's going to be a huge chaos because of that, and it's really hard to predict. But I think Hansi Flick, like few other people, knows what he has in Thomas Müller, and it would just be very, very nice to see him, improving on those great stats he already has at the World Cup. This could definitely be something for the record books if he scores a lot again, for example. So I would really like to see that, and I think we can really expect him to play a lot of those games at the World Cup, and we hope, of course, that there are going to be a lot of games there in the first place. I think it's not looking that bad, but yeah, the big question mark is actually the striker position, and it could actually even be Thomas Müller up there sometimes, so that could be good. Who knows, really? It's really hard to predict a bit. So many question marks there. Füllkrug, like, as a possible striker, is just a bit weird, but I mean, he has been very good. Moukoko is also another guy who's in the discussion there. And then you have the Havertz model with Havertz up top. So, and a couple of more options there. So it's really a bit of a mess. But I think Thomas Müller has been very good with the national team. And I think it's just the way Thomas Müller plays lends itself very well to playing in international games, like games like at the World Cup, because it's a bit of a different kind of football, because nothing or a few things are as routinely done as they are, like in the Bundesliga, for example. You don't know the other players as well. There's not as much in terms of automatisms and so on. So not everybody knows what the other guy is going to do. So yeah, I think the mental part of the game plays a more, even more important role there, because yeah, the actual thinking part is just not to be underestimated, because you need to watch more closely, because you cannot just assume what the other people will do. And I think Thomas Müller has always thrived in that, under those circumstances. I think that's something where he's really especially great. And I hope Hansi Flick finds a way for him to make the most of that. But I think he will. As I said, Hansi Flick is pretty much known, I would say, as someone who likes Thomas Müller a lot and puts him in the position to do the best he can for, in this case, Germany, and before, of course, FC Bayern. So, yeah, I'm definitely optimistic there. But of course, I'm also very, very excited what especially Musiala can do in the national team. And of course, this is, as you have hinted at, the same problem that we have on the club level, because they could very well play the same position. But I think, yeah, for in both cases, you can find a solution to get both of them on the field, and it can be great.
Yeah, and just to kind of address that, I think back to the Bayer Leverkusen win earlier this season, which, of course, it's Bayer Leverkusen, but both Müller and Musiala played and played really well. So, yeah, it certainly is possible to have them both performing in ideal positions and performing at a high level. But let's kind of shift gears a little bit, stop talking about Thomas Müller. And, Tim, we're going to talk about another one of your absolute favorite players, and that is, of course, Benjamin Pavard, who is apparently unhappy again at Bayern Munich. He's unhappy with the playing time that he has received. Apparently, we won't talk about, you know, what else is going on with him off the pitch. And he's unhappy about his playing time. He's unhappy that he's not being used at center back like he wants, and that Mazraoui is coming in. And it's really strange because I think on the flip side, he's also having the best season that he's ever had at a professional level. And so, Tim, I guess the first question is, you know, how can someone who's performing so well be unhappy? And second, do you think he's justified in his apparent unhappiness?
Yeah, there's a certain irony that the season that I start to kind of come around to him, he's like, I want to live. It's hard to not take that personally. I don't think that he's in a position where he should be complaining about the amount of play time that he's getting, because he's such a divisive character. Probably one of the most divisive players that I can really remember at Bayern. I don't think anybody has kind of split the audience like right down the middle, because some people absolutely adore him and think that he's like this great unsung hero, and he's like, oh, actually, if you look carefully, he's the reason why all of this works. And then others are like, if you get any other right back, he would be benched. And I think, considering what Mazraoui's done since he's arrived, it's kind of hard to not see like that latter argument as somewhat valid. I do think that this season Pavard has like really stepped up, because I think the biggest criticism that you could level against him was that he wasn't as attacking as perhaps Bayern fans were used to, with guys like Willy Sanyol, Philipp Lahm, and Joshua Kimmich, my guy Rafinha, like all of these, you know, world-class athletes. So like seeing somebody do it in a slightly different way, it's almost unusual and unfamiliar. And yeah, I can understand why people would, I can understand why people do like that, because it's, he's doing it his own different way, and like that's fantastic. But then maybe it's just my own personal bias, and like this is just what I want to see in a right back, is somebody more like Mazraoui, who is, you know, really contributing to the attack a lot more, and like clearly a really technically gifted, really fantastic player. I think obviously I'm definitely not a professional footballer, so I don't have that mindset. I don't understand what it's like to go from being the first name on the team, like, or certainly being a starter for, I guess, close to 3-4 seasons now. This is his third season. But then to go from that to suddenly, actually, there's this other guy that's been here for 10 minutes and is getting heralded as like this really fantastic player. I guess like one thing you can look at is the Barcelona game, where Mazraoui had to step in. I always feel that like joining a game early in the first half is much harder than if you were to just start,
for sure,
because everybody else has kind of like found their rhythm, and you're like, you need to take a couple of touches to like really get into it, but like there's not enough time, and it's and he did it effortlessly. I think the Mazraoui performance against Barcelona, like the first game, was really, really great. And he was like heavily involved in just about everything. I think he was like really, really crucial for Sané's goal. So to see somebody have that sort of impact as a right back with very little training, because he hadn't really featured for Bayern all that much before that, you can kind of anticipate, yeah, this guy's probably going to be the starter fairly soon. The response to that, though, isn't, well, I'm the starter. It's, okay, I now need to step up. But the irony there is that he has, but he's not happy doing it. I don't know. It's a very strange argument, because there's this whole other element to it, which is that he's not happy with the minutes that he's getting in a position that he doesn't want to be playing in, because he wants to be playing in another position where he's got two of the best defenders in Europe ahead of him right now. And then now that Hernandez is back, another one of somebody who could quite easily join that discussion. He's going from first place to now potentially first and second simultaneously choice right back to almost definitively fourth centre back, because he has to have some self-awareness that he's not better than Diop and Meccano. He's definitely not better than De Ligt, and he's not better than Lucas Hernandez. So what's the situation here? If he's not happy because he wants to be playing in the centre of defence, he's definitely not going to do that. I personally think that I'd almost rather see someone like Stanisic play in the centre of defence, because every time he's played, he's looked incredibly composed. He's looked really calm on the ball, and he just quietly gets on with it. And at no point has ever complained about, oh, why do I have to play at left back? Why do I have to play at right back? Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? He's a young guy. He's got all the time in the world ahead of him. That's the sort of play that I want to see. I never like seeing players, you know, like voice their displeasure with about a lack of playing time. I enjoy seeing the fact that players want to play more, but they have to take it upon themselves and say, the reason why I'm not doing it is because other people have stepped ahead of me. This is that whole discussion about Musiala last season, where it's like, don't ask what he's not doing for him to not get on the pitch. Ask what the other players are doing instead. And the response from Musiala is, okay, I'll just become one of the best players in the world. That's that sort of mindset and mentality and enthusiasm that I really want to see. And to be honest, if I am warming to Benjamin Pavard this season, great. I want to see that. I want to see him put in those performances where he's like, I'm going to show Nagelsmann, I'm going to show the rest of the players, I'm going to show the fans that I am better than Mazraoui for this role. Because that's the sort of healthy competition that makes a fantastic squad. If one person is just so ready to say like, oh, I should be first, but not actually want to back it up, then that's, I don't know, the whole thing just falls apart. I think he's maybe kind of potentially within his right to be disappointed, because obviously he's gone all of these years being the starting right back, and now a guy has come in from Ajax and is, you know, supposedly doing a better job. That's not on him. That's on Pavard. That's something for Pavard to address himself, work on in training, show that during the games. But then the whole thing is that that's not even the position that he wants to be in. It's just a really strange argument. And I guess, like, if the question is like, do we then just have to like capitalize and sell him on? Yeah, because this has been, there's like a number of other stories about him like not being happy or like being one of the first names that could potentially go out. I think it's really easy to look at Mazraoui as the starting right back, Stanisic as a clear deputy, and then potentially you need a deputy for the centre of defence. Stanisic, of course, he'll probably be fourth choice for that. I don't think anybody would really have a problem with that. There's every chance that Tongi Nyanzu could come back next season. That could kind of clear that up. I don't actually know how he's doing for Sevilla. I think he's had a couple of moments, but then I also think he's had a couple of moments. So I don't know. That remains to be seen. Yeah, it's a weird one. And I think the solution is he could potentially be one of the first names on the for sale list. And it's going to be a very strange discussion amongst the fans to see whether or not, yeah, we were right to sell him, or, oh no, we absolutely needed to keep him, at all costs. I think I know where I currently stand, though.
Yeah, and I think I'm with you as well. And I was just thinking, it's going to be interesting to see if and where he plays for the France national team at this World Cup, because it was the last World Cup where he really started playing at right back and kind of made a name for himself there. But just to kind of bring everything to a conclusion, Sebastian, we'll come to you for your thoughts on this. But also, you know, he wants to play center back. He got that chance yesterday against Hertha Berlin. Now, obviously, he gave away a penalty, but I don't think we can hold that too much against him. But otherwise, how do you think he played at center back? Was it enough to justify maybe getting more minutes there? Or do you see, and I know you don't see him better as a right back, but do you think his minutes are better spent at right back?
Oh, well, I guess, in terms of his performances so far, I think he's a better right back than center back, but I think he could be the better center back than right back, because that's what he naturally should be able to do better. But I think he would need some time to do that, to really get into that, because so far, I really see no reason why I would start him over De Ligt, and I'd see no reason why I would start him over Hernandez when he's completely ready to go. I really don't think that's necessarily a thing that where he's just going to take that spot anytime soon. I think he would need to put in some time, and then, of course, he could not expect to play all the games. If he goes to Nagelsmann now and says, okay, I want to be mainly a center back. Okay, right. But then he needs to accept that he cannot be our starting right back every game, but he can also not be our starting center back. He will have to learn a bit. He will have to grow into that role. And I think to an extent, that is what has been happening. He has received minutes at his favorite position, but he has also received minutes at right back still. And I think as someone who's, well, trying to grow into the role of a potential starting center back for us, this is as much as he can expect, because of course he cannot be our only right back if he's only going to be a part-time right back. But he can also not be our starting center back if he's basically learning that role to an extent. So I really don't quite get where this is coming from. I really don't see it. I mean, he has been playing, I think, basically two-thirds of the games started and two-thirds of the minutes. I really don't know where this is coming from. This is pretty good. This is, I don't know. I'm really, really confused why he is complaining so much. Yeah, I get it. Actually, I get it more with Gravenberg. I would get it more with Tell. But I think it seems like Pavard is the guy out of those three who's the most annoyed, really. And I think he's the one out of these three, who has the least reason to be annoyed about what's going on, really. So, yeah, it is a frustrating kind of situation there. And now I think I forgot, you also asked another question, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you pretty much answered everything that, you know, I was going to say, how has he been, and just thoughts in general. But I almost don't even bother to... you know, Tim talked about he's probably Pavard being a candidate to sell next summer, or maybe even in the winter, but I don't even think I need to bring that up with you.
Yeah, if he's unhappy, I mean, then he can go. I mean, we can do without him. I'm absolutely not against keeping him, not at all. And I'm also not against him getting sizable amount of minutes, but he cannot, like, behave like this is a huge... problem when he's basically playing most of the minutes. I don't see how that's okay. This is a mentality that I would rather not deal with if I were Nagelsmann.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really the most baffling to me, is he's playing a lot, and he's playing really well. I mean, well to the point that we're like, okay, now we have two good right backs, not just one. So really confusing situation, but I'm sure that we'll see it resolved. If not over the winter break, then by the end of the season. But that is all the time that we have for this episode. So if you've enjoyed listening today, or if you're a regular fan of the podcast and you haven't done this already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate that. And if you want to get in touch with us, there are a few ways that you can do that. You can follow us over on Twitter @SuperBayernPod and keep up to date with us there. or you can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com and we'll do our best to get back with you quickly. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, we're probably going to be there. As always, thank you for listening, go out and tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.